it's time to welcome our guest, Wally Adamczyk, to the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades. He has family roots in the construction industry, where he worked side by side with tradesmen in the field as a teenager. He was a former Marine for 10 years. He flew Cobra attack helicopters and drove tanks. He was a former mascot at Notre Dame. He started his own business where he speaks and consults on leadership in construction, coaching, and training. He is passionate. He is an advocate about the skilled trades. Welcome, Wally, to the podcast.
Thanks, Andrew. I appreciate it.
So tell me, Wally, before we dive into the nuts and bolts, how does someone become a mascot their senior year at Notre Dame?
You try out, and it's a fairly rigorous process. There's an interview with a diverse panel of people, and most mascots wear a head, right? And they don't talk. Well, at Notre Dame, all you're wearing is a top hat and a beard, so you're going face-to-face. So the interview is a really important part. But then you do some partner stunts with some guys and some girls. You do a skit, you do a jig. And I was fortunate enough to have the honor of doing that in my senior year, and it was an incredible experience.
I always think of Rudy, right?
Yeah.
The movie Rudy?
Yeah. He was there a little bit before me, but it's a special place. And if you're a fan of college football, I would put it on your list.
Yeah, 100%. And that's great stuff, Wally. It's interesting to hear that, your background on that. Good stuff.
It was a hell of a time, I can tell you that.
I can't imagine. Yes. I can certainly imagine. Let's dive into the nuts and bolts. The idea behind our podcast is to revive the blue collar trades. And something happened years prior. The narrative changed where before it was cool to work with your hands, to get your hands dirty, to be a tradesman. And something changed over X amount of years where it's not as cool. And I wanted to hear your sort of take of what you've seen over the years and where it's trending today.
I don't know if I have any original thought on it, but we were an agrarian economy up through the Depression, and then we became an industrial economy, people still working with their hands. And then we move into the manufacturing and knowledge and information economy where we are now. And World War II ends, a lot of men go to college and begin the upward trend of affluence in our society. And look, I'll be the first one to tell you, I'm a product of the American dream. My dad joined the Navy when he was 17 in World War II, came home and he worked in the trades, as did my brother. And that's who I was working with in New York City when I was 13 years old as a helper on job sites. But the old man, it was always like, go to college. And I'm like, I didn't know what I wanted to do. But working in construction was certainly a viable and an honorable place. But I simply said, the demographics of our country have changed. And so have our expectations and our willingness to, quote, work.
And your dad was in the steel industry, if I'm correct. And he worked on projects like the Verrazano Bridge.
Yeah. When he first got out of the Navy after his second stint in Korea, he was a steel guy. Later, he became a flooring guy. And that's what my brother was as well. But yeah, that was his first stuff. And I still drive over that big bridge. And man, Dad built this. And isn't that one of the cool things about trade work and construction?
100%. And that's honorable right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've been working with tradesmen from the get-go when you were just a teenager. What did you see in the different tradesmen out there? Were they hard workers? What did you see working side by side with them?
A bunch of good guys trying to do good work. And I say guys because that's what it was. Now it's a bunch of good people trying to do good work. Craftsmanship, again, pride, camaraderie in getting the job done. And here we are in New York City in a union environment, and there's, you know, slander against the unions, a bunch of good people trying to do good work and make a good life for themselves. And that's what my dad and my brother were able to do.
And sorry, go ahead. Oh, it leads me into sort of that subtopic. Why are more people taking a white collar job over a blue collar job? What is the advantage one way or the other? Why are people doing that today as opposed to years ago?
Well, if you look at the numbers, and we mean money, over the last generation or two, white collar salaries were outpacing blue collar salaries. I mean, you could make more money, and maybe that's one of our fundamental motivators in our country these days. So there was something compelling there. And again, the thing I talked about earlier with the American dream of, quote, I want it better for you. These men who went and fought World War II and created the country that we have now. And I sacrificed so you wouldn't have to do this. Very noble, and it worked in a lot of cases. So again, this, the money, the perception of blue collar being less than, and that didn't exist, I don't think, maybe two generations ago, where this push for college became even harder. And high schools began to get measured on how many of their graduates went to college. And now we're seeing a shift. And you know, a couple of years back, my son, how many people are going to college? How many going to the military? How many of you join a trade, right? So they're bringing honor back to that. But I think it was a lot to do with these demographic shifts that just happened.
And are we doing a good job in our schools teaching kids that the trades is a good option to go into? What is being said when you're sitting down with a guidance counselor? Is that even coming up to kids of our
Again, if you just look at the broader trend, if you go back again, two generations, 50% of teens would have had a part-time job of some kind, school year, summer, whatever. Now that trend's below 30%. And the percent working during the school year, probably down in the teens, 17% or so. So we see an overall decline in labor force participation of teens, which then obviously extends into working in construction, trades, whatever, because of this drive to go to college. I remember wood shop, metal shop, electric shop. When I was in high school, I still use those skills, right? Whether it's mechanical drawing and being on a job site and looking at some plans, or I remember during summer, during COVID, I was changing a spotlight in the backyard, putting a motion detector in. I'm up on the ladder, and my son, who was 17 at the time, I said, hey, I need your help. You need to hand me some stuff. And here I am, red to red, black to black, and all the stuff I learned in metal shop. And I look down at him and I go, you have no idea what I'm doing, do you? He goes, not at all. I said, that's not your fault. You know, let's pause. And he says, where did you learn it? I said, it was just part of what we did. My dad remodeled part of our house. I took metal shop. So no, we're not exposing the youth to this opportunity. And that creates a gap. So not only am I not seeing it in high school, I don't have a role model anymore, right? If less adults are in construction, I don't have a role model to go into construction. And we know that's one of the most fundamental influencers on the job you get, whether you join the military, there was a family member in the military, you join construction, there was a family member in construction, whatever that role model is. So we're losing that also. So we've done a horrendous job of making glamorous these quote white collar, non-blue collar jobs. And what we're seeing now, obviously, is that they may not be paying as well, they may not be as secure, and there truly is an option for people to go back and work with their hands and make a pretty attractive wage, by the way. And that's a misunderstanding out there, too, about that it's low-income work. It's not, as you well know.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Going back to when I was in school, I don't recall all, maybe wood shop and some basic courses, but it wasn't pushed upon us to go that route. It really wasn't. There was more of a white collar type of push out there to go into a 4-year degree. But what they didn't tell you was, you know what, you're going to come out with a good amount of debt coming out of school and then starting off and trying to figure out where you're going, as opposed to going into the trades, where you can go to trade school for maybe 1 or 2 years. It's not as expensive, and you can come out of the gate in a lot better position than you would as if you were going a 4-year degree.
Absolutely. We've seen so much about that. What can I make in my first year in blue or white collar, and how much debt do I have to pay? How much can I begin to save, and how much better off might I be in 10 or 20 years? The numbers are pretty compelling. And again, the stories are getting out with folks like you waving the flag. We need to do more of it for sure.
And I agree, 100%. So let's say you're 18 or 20 years old and you're thinking about your career options. Why would even someone consider the skilled trade as a career option? I know you touched upon it, but I want to expand a little bit more on that.
They wouldn't. That's the problem, right? So we have to get the message out that this is an attractive career, and it's an attractive career for you. So there's misunderstanding out there, right? So we need to overcome the misunderstanding that the reason the word skilled trades, right, not frontline laborer who's just moving garbage around, although that could be an entry-level position, right? There's a misunderstanding of what the entry wage rates are in the skilled trades. You look at like electrical linemen, these guys are coming out of the military and going, hey, what could I do? They can go be a lineman and make $100,000 a year. Oh, no, by the way, a high school kid could do the exact same thing, right? So obviously there are regional differences, there are trade differences that get into these conversations, but it's a lack of information. And as you noted, are the guidance counselors and the teachers putting that in front of the student? Now, there's contractors, there's associations that are making an active push to get into the schools, and they're doing a really good job of it. There's just not enough of them yet. But we know that if we can get a kid's attention early, like in 10th, 11th grade, and get them thinking, and maybe getting them some kind of safe co-op or internship during the summers, where they're making some good money, by the way, as a laborer. And I know there are safety constraints in some of that. But so it's misinformation that has to be corrected. And that's the primary way to attack this, I think.
Yeah, I think it's awareness. Just to reiterate what you're saying, is just getting in front of people, getting in front of the younger generation and letting them know that going down the path of being a welder is a lost art. There are not as many people coming out of trade school. Like, for instance, there was a study somewhere where for every 7 electricians who were retiring, only one is coming out of trade school. And that's scary.
And you take that to the logical extension. All right, who's going to fix fill in the blank? Right? Who's going to fix the power line? Who's going to fix, look, all this virtual stuff is cool, and Oculus and VR and all of that stuff. But at the end of the day, somebody has to tie the rebar. At some point, that may be a robot. Somebody has to pour the concrete. That ain't going to be a robot in the next 10 years. Somebody has to make those electrical connections. Somebody needs to, quote, dig that ditch for that sewer. So yeah, we can talk about growth in America all you want, but if the infrastructure is poor, we're not going to have growth. It's going to be constrained growth. It's going to be finite. And so we're investing in ourselves as a nation, really, when we invest in the tribe.
I read somewhere in the infrastructure, the U.S. is a C-minus in our infrastructure. And it concerns me that they're trying to put, obviously, billions of dollars in fixing up the roads and the bridges and tunnels. And that's great. But who's taking the job? Who's going to do the work if you have this huge gap in the trades?
And sadly, now, you know, the contractors are busy and they don't have people, and they're going, I guess we just got to work our guys harder. That takes your current crop of guys and makes them say, you know something? I'm out of here. I don't want to work 80 hours a week. And this is where we got to win them over. My daughter had the opportunity to do a marketing internship for a very large construction company for a couple of months. She was a Division I golfer. She had an internship with the PGA Tour that got canceled because of COVID. And so now she's like, what do I do? I said, you know who I know. Excuse me. And she went to work for them for 2 months. Two things she said. She said, these are great people. I could see myself doing something like this. We win them over one at a time. My generation doesn't want to work this hard. And by hard, she meant long, right? 80-hour days in infrastructure during the summer. I said, honey, I don't blame you. So within that, out of the mouth of babes comes wisdom. Here's this 22-year-old talking the truth. There's opportunity here. I could see myself doing it, but you guys are insane, and I don't know if I want to do that. You can't pay me enough to do that. So once we get people into the trades, we got to give them some work-life balance. We got to make it an attractive place once they get there too.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And there are so many different routes that you can take, obviously, being a plumber or be a carpenter or electrician. But there are ways that you can, you know, go into more of a leadership role. Someone can come out and start their own business one day.
And my job is teaching leadership in construction. So within larger organizations, that person, that foreman, that superintendent, traditionally we would take the best fill in the blank, paver, operator, plumber, carpenter, whatever, and make them a supervisor, which may or may not be the right answer. But yeah, you're not going to be working on your hands and knees with your tools for 55 years if you start at age 20, if you don't want to. There are plenty of opportunities to lead, to maybe get into estimating or get into some type of supervision or inspection. And again, there's part of the misconception of, well, I'm going to be a carpenter and I'm going to be swinging a hammer for the next 50 years of my life. Not true.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. There is a path that you can take to, and I can't think of exactly an example per se, but the perception out there obviously is if when you start your business as a plumber or a carpenter, you build up your business, there's a lot of unique opportunity out there that, you know, where I even see it here in my local neighborhood, there's not enough plumbers to do the work. They are charging a lot of extra money because there's not a lot of guys who are doing the work.
Yeah, and who can run a business at the same time too. There's a whole entrepreneurial aspect, but here I am in my basement, which is my studio, right? And there's piping all over the place. There's wiring all over the place. And I don't have the expertise to deal with that. We need experts who can deal with that. Yeah, this need is not going away. This need is getting bigger. And hopefully people will tune in and somebody will hear this podcast and say, hey, you need to go listen to this, talking to their nephew or something like this. And the associations are starting to get on board. Companies are starting to get on board. I know contractors now who have one hired a shop teacher. And T.W. Matthews in Atlanta, they're a big infrastructure company. They hired a shop teacher and said, we want you to go into the schools. And he does programs, he does training, but he's bringing an asset to the school as opposed to just recruiting. Now he's bringing content and the educators are saying, oh, absolutely, come on in. And this past year and the past couple of years, they've had high school kids come in as interns and then they sign them. Right. And they get them into the company. If we're sitting here as a construction company waiting for somebody to fix our problems, that ain't gonna happen. Right. You got to fix your own problem and begin to create those opportunities. One off and referrals. Ooh, the kid next door. Go recruit him. The kid on the soccer team. Been a soccer dad with or a soccer mom with somebody for the last 5 years. Hey, what's Junior going to do? That's not really sure. He's going to go to community college or whatever. Hey, have you ever thought about fill in the blank? And there's a huge opportunity there as well. But again, that's us telling the story one-on-one at somebody at a soccer game.
Yeah, exactly. They need to know and understand what the opportunities are, that it's not, and I keep going back to the same thing, it's not a dirty job. It's not what you think it is. There is a whole nother side and a whole nother level of having this skill set that is, to some degree, dying. It's just, it's not being passed along. And here's an example of someone who told me on LinkedIn that he is a long line of carpenters. And he decided, I'm not going to get into it. It's not for me. And it stopped. It's generation to generation. And then it just stopped. And he went off in a completely different direction. And that's what happens. And he times that by thousands and thousands of people. And that's why you have a huge trades skill gap in there, or one of the reasons.
When you look at the wage gap, right? And blue collar did lose ground over the years and it's starting to regain, but it's still not only a financial, but a perceptual deficit that, again, we need to tell the story. There's great opportunities out there, but classic example there. And look, if a kid wants to go do something, have at it. We're not trying to talk somebody to be in construction if they don't want to be there, but they're not even looking at this as an opportunity. And the research on that has been pretty compelling for the last couple of years. Yeah, it's great. It's just not for me. Let's talk about why it could be for you. And we can win them over one at a time, I think.
Yeah. I definitely agree. And typically, if you were to go into trade school, it is only about a 1 to 2 year program, correct? If depending on which direction that you take.
Yeah, in the trades. Grade, of course. And is it union or non-union and a couple of those structural things. But yeah, you can, in most programs, you're not in school for 365 days. You're in for class, you're out working. You're in for class, you're out working, right? And there's some level of balance where you're getting on the job, real world experience, a real wage as well, real benefits as well. And as we adults know, those things really matter.
Yeah, no, they all do. And this is a great cause. And I'm glad that you're passionate about this and what you do in building leaders and helping people see that the skilled trades is a great option to get into. And I love the mission that you're on and I love the things that you're doing in the industry.
There's a lot of us doing it, but it's such a fragmented industry, as you well know, with the various trades and the various associations. We're starting to gain some critical mass. We're starting to get organizations that would traditionally not be in the room together, like owners and contractors or union and non-union, whatever the case may be, coming together because we are stronger than me, right? And to create that critical mass and get this word out that this is honorable. The feeling of driving across the Verrazano Narrows Bridge and saying, I built for those who built that. My dad built this. Tell me where else you can get a sense of tangible pride like that. And off the top of my head, I can't think of anywhere.
Yeah, getting your building stuff with your hands is extremely honorable. There is something about a hard day's work of building something and getting that job done. It really is.
Well, nothing good ever came easily, right? Nothing good ever came easily, right? It's whether
hard work.
Whether it's, quote, blue collar or being a professional speaker or tools as you do, right? It requires hard work. And regrettably, I think this current generation looks at being a TikTok millionaire. Like even the TikTok millionaires work their ass off behind the scenes. They just make it look easy. But hey, if I could get paid to make videos, I would do it. Look, maybe I am. Anyway, right? Hard work is absolutely a reward in and of itself. And I agree with you on that.
Yeah, no, and I'm 100% agreement. And if you can pick up a skill and something in the trades and keep the industry going to make sure that our infrastructure is secure for the future, that's a win-win across the board.
And if you don't want to use your hands, use your butt. Be a CDL driver. Learn how to drive a truck. I joke and I say that's my retirement plan, to drive a dump truck and have a CDL. I guarantee you I'm going to have a job making good money, show up at 5 a.m. and be done at 3 p.m., whatever the case may be, and I'll shuffle back home. So there are other things, and you know, we use construction and trades, and heck, we have operators operating big yellow pieces of iron remotely now, right, because of safety and maybe some labor and location issues. So many things worth investigating here under this broad concept of construction and the trades that, to your point, it's not a dirty job. Heck, look at them. We've got high-tech computer stuff being done in this industry as well. Like I said, we have simulators and remote work being done. So this is not your father's your grandfather's construction industry anymore. And once again, that's a story that people have no idea.
No. And people also have job security in the trades, would you say?
Yeah, I do. I absolutely do. The numbers, do people get laid off when in a downturn? Yes, that happens in every industry. But if you're worth a darn, you're going to be okay. Look at the infrastructure. We're a C+. We're not getting any better. Look at the investment. Look at growth. Our country is still growing. We need new roads. We need new bridges. We need new malls. We need sewage to go to those things. We need wires to go to them. We're not going to do wireless everything, right? And the electrical grid with all this electrification of cars and all of that power's got to come from somewhere. Yeah. That water's got to come from somewhere. So it's not recession proof, but it's recession resistant is what I would say.
Yeah, we need every last one of them to keep, as you said, the infrastructure going. But there's, again, just reiterating, it's just great opportunity out there to get into the trades. And it's a great avenue for someone who's young and hopefully someone who's listening to this to even pique their interest to take that step in the trades.
Yeah, you look at these security guys that are putting security packages into IT facilities or banks. That is high-tech stuff to not hack it. They got to run the wires and all of those things, but then the programming and the, oh my God, it's high-tech. There's so much good stuff out there.
So robots are not going to take over, right? There's still going to be needs for tradesmen, right?
Yeah, I've seen those movies. We're not there yet.
Yeah.
Who knows? And I don't think apes are going to take over yet either. For the foreseeable future, it's people doing work led by people who care about people. And that is what is going to help our industry move forward.
Amen. Thank you, Wally. You have a unique perspective on the trades and why making a career in the trades is an exciting option for the younger generation. Thank you to our listeners out there, where our mission is to flip the script on blue-collar trades. We'll see you on the next episode.